Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. Let's do a podcast. You guys. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 21st, 2016. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. Get some of those things off your chest and you'll feel a lot lighter. It's kind of like taking an emotional dump. That's not the best way to describe that, but it's you know, you're getting it off. You're freeing yourself. You're lifting a weight off your shoulder, the shoulders of your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now at this moment on Twitter at Chris Lambert. So this is episode 157. I have a very special guest, Ali Muhammad from the End the Conversation podcast. I'm going to share that with you in a few moments, but I'm going to talk to you for a little bit too. I mean, it's my podcast. And if I decide that I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to talk to you, because more right now, I mean, it's my birthday, you guys. I'm 36 years old, and I want to, you know, shout out to my mom and dad, my dad for impregnating my mom 36 years ago, and them keeping me and raising me to be a decent dude. Any mistakes I've made, it's not their fault, it's mine. Thinking for my dad to, you know, make that move at that club, what was it, maybe like 40, 50 years ago, maybe, when he met. I remember when I was a kid and my parents, we'd be coming from North Carolina and my parents would be arguing and they passed the club where they met. My mother would say, "I wish I never seen him. I wish I never seen him, that nigga." And so those were always warm memories. And I would turn my Walkman up and listen to Tupac as they would argue in the front seat. So yeah, it's my birthday, and I'm recording this thing at 3:24 a.m. on Sunday morning. And why do you ask, Chris? Why do you ask, Chris, what? Why am I doing this early? Well, when you fall asleep at 8 o'clock, you have your plans that you're going to, you know, maybe rent an Amazon movie, a movie on Amazon. And you're going to watch, maybe you're going to watch the, you know, you're going to time that out to when the movie's over. You can watch the tail end of the Warriors Clippers game. But that doesn't happen. So because you fall asleep. So right now I've got the Warriors Clippers game on mute, and then I'm giving you this podcast intro. So I had a pretty good week. Want to shout out to Chris Laker, who had me on his show called The New Show at the Creek in the Cave. It's a show where it's a stand-up show. You do stand-up. You have about maybe four comics or so. And then at the end of everybody's set, Chris hosts a podcast, and he throws out questions and you riff on them. It was fun. I've done it a couple of times before, but this, I got to say, was the most fun I've had doing it. And whenever it comes out, I will tweet it and you can listen to it. So did that and did a show at Lucy's in Pleasantville, and it's a Pleasantville, New York. And that was fun. Closed that show out, riffed and all that stuff at the top. Should have riffed a lot more, because I think the crowd, they liked me, but I think the crowds, I just have to let go. I just have to just jump and then build my parachute as I'm falling to make the end with a lot of things I'm going to do in my life. But so that was fun. And Friday I went to see another play, man. I saw this show called Smart People, which was written by Lydia Diamond, directed by Kenny Leon, and it's at the Second Stage Theater in New York City. And it's an off-Broadway show that stars Mahershala Ali from House of Cards, Hunger Games, the new Luke Cage show that's coming out, and Joshua Jackson, Pacey. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I know he's in The Affair. And I know he's done stuff that's not Dawson's Creek related, but that nigga's Pacey, and he always going to be Pacey. It's good that he doesn't take himself too seriously. Like, he's a good actor, but, you know, that nigga's Pacey. You know what I'm saying? And Annie Sun, who I wasn't familiar with, but she's a great actress. She's done a lot of movies. Look her up. Ann Sun, A-N-N-E-S-O-N. And the lovely and talented Tessa Thompson from Dear White People and more recently Creed. She's phenomenal. Like the whole show was great. Great performances all around. Tessa Thompson is very funny, very beautiful. It's funny how do I want to get into that? Nah, maybe I'll save that for the stage. But yeah, so that she's terrific. She's funny. The whole show, it was just great. It's so awesome to see live theater, and it's just so fucking expensive. I gotta try to figure out a way to not be so touristy. Like, I haven't lived here for like almost 9 years or so. It's just Times Square is such a shit show. And last week I was more of a tourist because I paid $40 for parking, and I was so mad at myself. But I was like, yo, this is you're doing this for your birthday, but I still could have been a lot more frugal with that. And I just got pissed off, and the ParkWiz app was not working. I'm going to blame it on ParkWiz. But this week it did work, and it's usually never failed me, but that was only one time. But I went, got the parking. But the thing about that was, if like rush hour in New York City in the theater district is just such a nightmare. And initially I missed the parking garage. Like, it was staring me right in the face as I drove past it. I was like, is that my parking spot? Is that the parking spot? Is that the parking garage? Is that it? And I missed it. And I had to spend another 30 minutes to, before I could get back around there. And so I ended up parking, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll just go to Shake Shack in the theater district. Nope, you can't do that unless you want to wait in line for an hour. And I'm not waiting in line that long for, you know, a burger. Like, it's a good ass burger, I think. Probably one of the best. I got to say, it's probably one of the best fast food burgers around. So I didn't, and I was looking for a place. So I ended up going to this place called Southern Hospitality. In like, I think that's like on maybe like 43rd, 44th or 45th Street. And it's on the west side. And yeah, that was, I think it's like Justin Timberlake had steak in it at some point. I don't know. It's a barbecue spot. And it was all right. Like, it was, the food was decent. It was a little overpriced. But that's what you're going to get when you're in New York anyway. And you're near Times Square, but it was expensive. It was overpriced. Like, this was a place, like, most of the stuff is a la carte, and I got some beef brisket, which was solid. It was a little tough. I've had much better at this spot called Northern Smoke. I think I talked about that last summer when I was up there in Carmel, New York, doing a show. Like, that shit was fire. I thought I was going to get some, like a half rack of baby back ribs to go with it, but it was literally just one rib. Like, they gave you, I wish I'd have taken a picture of it, but I didn't want to look like a douche taking a picture of my food on Insta. You know what I'm saying? It's still kind of, it's like, eh. You know, you end up doing the same shit that everybody else does, even though you think you're different. Like if you, like when I went to go see Blackbird or in this show, I just took a picture of the on Instagram and, you know, posted it to Facebook just to say, look at me, I was here, I was at this thing. And there's hundreds of people doing that, you know, so I'm just a fucking lemming like everybody else. So I eat there and it was fine, but just the one fucking rib, like, give me, are you serious? They want to charge $4 for that shit. It's like, just give me a half rack. Give me just like a little or a quarter of the rack or whatever the fuck. I don't know. That was just kind of annoying to me. And I was like, just one, because I told the waitress, I was like, just one rib. She's like, yeah, it's kind of hard to explain it to people when we do it. It's just like, you know. But I would probably go back to try their chicken. But then at the same time, you're paying $25 for like three pieces of chicken. But that's what you, I guess it's just fucking, if I had money, I would do a lot more of this shit. I would try more of these things and tell you about it. Because you can actually, I guess, make a fucking career overreacting to shit now. You know, that's the new, I watched a 23-minute video of some guy just reviewing The Life of Pablo, Kanye's new album. And he just like he just presses play on the song. He's like, oh shit, all this shit, nigga, right here. And he's got like 18,000 followers on Twitter. And then GQ is like saying, oh my god, this review of everything's in hyperbole now. This review of The Life of Pablo might be better than the album. No, it's not. No, it's fucking not. Okay, it's just annoying to me. Like people that don't create seem to have the most power on social media, on the internet. People that have never, all right, let me get off my soapbox. This is, you know, that's just something that kind of irks me. It's a little annoying. I don't lose sleep over it. I mean, granted, this is coming from a guy that's recording an episode at 3:30 in the morning, but I digress. It was all right. The food was all right. It's best to stay out of the shit show that is Times Square. I would say you should stay on, maybe do something on the outskirts of that area for your dinner. You know, if you're going to something before a show, you know, but it's fine. It's all right. Movies. I saw Deadpool. It was all right. It was fine. Like it was, you know, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I was right in the middle. I like Ryan Reynolds. He's fine. The girl, the chick was hot. Okay. It just seemed like a big sice to me, but a lot of the nerds that are into the comic books were very happy with it because they say it lived up to the spirit of the books. And I could fuck with that. I would say my equivalent of that would be, because I'm always trying to understand people. And understanding people helps me understand myself sometimes. And I was talking to the homie J.L. Covan yesterday, and well, Friday, 2 days ago. And I was like, well, you know what? I guess all of this, and he didn't really care for it that much either. But I was saying, I guess this is like kind of like the time where I was excited about the Virgin Suicides film adaptation. Sofia Coppola's movie, her debut, her first movie. In the year 2000. That movie. And I remember reading the novel by Jeffrey Eugenides before the film came out. And this was one of the few films that actually, you know, really synced up or really had the spirit of the novel there, like officially on point. And I think that's one of Sofia Coppola's best films. Most people go to the easy choice to be Lost in Translation, but I actually thought Virgin Suicide, that's one of my personal favorites of hers. And that's like prime Kirsten Dunst, you know. That's prime delicate, hashtag delicate white angel, hashtag white starlets. Yeah, that was a good film. So I totally, that made me understand how and why the nerds really liked Deadpool. So I get it, nerds. Okay, I still think that Ryan Reynolds has not eclipsed his role in Just Friends, the rom-com with Amy Smart. I like that movie. I just really dug that flick. That's one of my favorites. I own it, and so it goes. You know, that's just my opinion. Everybody's got an opinion. What else? So look, guys, let's get to this conversation with Ali Muhammad. So I found out about Ali through Damian Lemon, and he is one of the co-hosts of In the Conversation podcast with the homie D Lemon and Vlad Camaño. It's a terrific podcast. It's appointment listening every week, every Wednesday. I'm doing my TPS reports. I'm listening to those guys. Fantastic podcast. You should listen to it, subscribe, all that good stuff. And I like Ali because he always just kind of has this sage. He has this sage like quality to him it's not overbearing, it's not forced, but I just think that's his genuine nature. And he just seems to just to have a great head on his shoulder. I learned a lot just listening to him talk. I like listening to his perspective on a lot of things on the podcast. So I was like, I got to get this guy on my show, Break Bread with him. So we did that. That's what, after I saw Deadpool, I headed down to Bed-Stuy, and we met at this place called Saragina in Bed-Stuy, which is this Italian wood burning pizza place. And they have other dishes there as well. But we hung out there and we talked for a good while. And I gotta say, we had a great conversation, and this is the second episode, conversation guest that I've had where we've been in a loud ass restaurant. And I'm gonna tell you, like, this is this podcast. You know a podcast is kind of low budget when you gotta preface everything. It's like, yo, look, this ain't NPR. This ain't the Cat Ranch. This ain't WTF. I ain't on my Mark Murray shit. Like, I can't get, you know, I don't have no studio, but I got this Zoom microphone, and I put that joint down in the middle of the restaurant, and we rapping and we having a good conversation. And so what if you could kind of hear somebody talk about their dog getting their leg amputated? You know, that's life. You know what I'm saying? You gotta roll with the punches. So I'm gonna tell you, it's loud, but you can get the essence of, you can get what we're talking about, and I think it's a really good conversation. And that was the place that we, you know, that we met, and you can get it's indie. Let's sell it that way. Let's sell it like it's an art house, gritty podcast. Guerrilla podcasting in the middle of what Ali calls the white people oasis. So here's my conversation with the very talented Ali Muhammad.
I'd rather it come to us.
So is this place always, is it always popping like this?
With this place?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the evening for dinner, it's always crowded. You know what I mean? It's if you listen to In the Conversation, I call it the oasis. Yeah. That's where, you know, all the new neighbors, the white neighbors, they all congregate here in the evenings.
Ah.
Like when it's first opened, I didn't know that many white people lived over here.
Okay.
And then when you come in here, it's like, oh, shit.
Brooklyn always fascinates me. I always say that it's like, especially like Williamsburg, but even the all the other gentrified areas, it's more like Williamsburg especially, it's always, it reminds me of NBA All-Star Weekend for white people. Like, it's just always, it's just so fun, like Brooklyn Bowl and that whole strip. What is that, White Avenue?
Yeah, I don't spend much time over there.
I just know the places in Brooklyn I know is usually just from like shows that I do. So that's my whole knowledge of it.
No doubt.
So like I'll see like, oh, there's brownstones, but I got to make sure I find parking and get to where I'm going. I don't really get to take it all in.
Right.
And I went to the Brooklyn Museum maybe 6 or 7 years ago, mm-hmm. when they had that black, what was it? It was one. They did a thing about it on HBO where Chris Rock was there. Was on,
oh, really?
It. And it was just, they made a book. I don't even remember the name of it.
I mean, the Brooklyn Museum is always popping. They got Target Saturdays where, you know, every right. Saturday everybody get in free. Mm-hmm. They usually do some type of event, you know, special exhibits and, you know. And then they're designated weekends when they're decidedly black.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Where they have a DJ, a party, you know what I mean? Some performance.
Like, it seems like some people, I don't know, like you kind of forget the blackness of Brooklyn sometimes with the way gentrification is taken over. Like you just the way it's projected. Well, do you feel that way?
Nah, because I live in Bed-Stuy. I live in Bed-Stuy, and it's, you know, they haven't overrun Bed-Stuy, so it's like, you know, still a lot black over here.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
They're not completely.
No, it's not a, okay. It's not a park sloped out, you know what I mean, at all.
How long have you been in Brooklyn?
16 years. I've been in New York. I've been in New York since 99, so what's that, 17 years?
Okay. So you're from Miami,
I'm from,
right?
I'm from Miami, yeah.
What's that like? Is that a big football town?
Definitely a big football time. Does this thing need to hear you?
I think you can. I think they can hear me. I mean, I think we're good. I just want to make sure we're hearing you. No, I'll hold it.
No, we good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so. It's a big football town.
Definitely a big football town.
You got to think. So when were you coming up? When were you?
I came up during the era of the U.
So okay,
all right. I came up in the '80s, like, you know, '88 era, you know, Craig era, and so the U was the shit.
Yeah.
And that was our, basically, that served as our pro football team, even though we had the Dolphins.
Oh,
and we
God.
Had Dan Marino, but that was like Heartbreak City.
Yeah.
So the U was our, you know, that was our version of, yeah, we doing it out here.
You had the Hurricanes and Luke. Luke the Campbell.
We had Hurricanes, we had Luke, you know what I mean? And Luke basically was a booster to the Hurricanes, so it was all the same.
Now I hear he's trying to coach a team. Like, is it,
you know, he's been coaching. He founded a little league organization.
Okay.
So Liberty City Optimists is something he started. So he's been doing that since at least the early 90s.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I interviewed him a couple of years ago when he was running for mayor, and he basically explained how he started the Optimist Club, you know, to get guys going, but then he found out, you know, there's a gap between the time they leave the Optimist team and go to high school, and then they have to learn a new system. You know what I'm saying? Coaches don't really understand the players, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. coming into the system. So some fall by the wayside when they get into high school. So that's why he decided to start coaching in the high school level.
Okay. So what's the drop-off? Like, what's, like, when does that program end? And then,
like, when you go to ninth grade, when you go to high school,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Maybe ninth grade will be your last year Optimist ball,
okay.
that you're eligible. But so he decided that he would go into high school coaching to be able to acclimate his guys into a certain system. So at that time, he was at Northwestern, which was the feeder program for the neighborhood where the Liberty City Optimist was. So,
is that as serious as Texas football?
Yes.
Because I just got into that show Friday Night Tykes,
mm-hmm.
on Netflix, and oh my God. Like, I played Boys and Girls Club, but it was nowhere near as intense.
No, it's like that, because if you look at the NFL, the city of Miami probably has the most NFL players of any city.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? The state of Florida, You know what I'm saying? It's like well represented in the NFL. So it's guys who understand, like, yo, this can happen. You know what I'm saying? You know how that is. It's it's like being from Brooklyn and being a rapper. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You got Jay, you got Big, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
You being from Hollis, Queens, and you got Russell Simmons and LL, and you know what I mean? You got a whole long list of rappers that come from there, so it's serious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like that with football.
Yeah, did you, how long did you play? Did you have
played till I discovered girls.
So what, 12?
Nah, I played till I played all the way to ninth grade.
Oh, okay.
And then it was like, eh.
I didn't like to practice, man.
I'm damn near uncoachable.
Yeah.
Well, I talked about it on the podcast. Uh-huh. If you go to the episode on In the Conversation called the Mac 10 Bag.
Okay.
That was an episode that happened with my father and the coach of the team.
I remember that. Was that? That's like a year ago, right?
Yeah.
That's something like where it's like my dad was kind of like he just stayed back.
Right.
There was a time where I got enough because I was a bigger kid. I was a fat kid.
Right.
And I was fifth grade, 10, playing with guys 12, 13, 14 years old. There was a kid messing with me. We got in a fight. Mm-hmm. And my dad was like, let him fight. Mm-hmm. Just let him fight. And it was fine. I beat him. I mean, it wasn't. But watching these shows, like, it's like you got these stage dads. Like, they're like, my son should be playing. And that.
Right.
It's intense, dude.
It is. It is. And because it's like people going for the goal, which it's unlike any other occupation where you can see the direct results.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You understand the stats. You know what I'm saying? You got 24-hour news cycle of the stats, the pay, the, you know what I'm saying, everything that you need to know about the sport.
Yeah.
Is like ESPN. And even before ESPN in Miami, you know, you had all of the stats in the newspaper.
Right.
So it's guys that could read the stats and tell you, well, shit, I just need 7 more catches, and then I had the same percentage as such and such had when he graduated from high school. And it's like, it's a lot of research that goes into it. And when you have the level of intensity and you know what can happen, because it's guys that it's happened for in that community, and the you is right there, and you seen guys go from this neighborhood and this school and go pro, you know what I'm saying? They go for it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's all it is. It's just a system of, okay, how can we keep the kids going? And now all of the scouts come there. You know what I'm saying? So it's a big deal.
How do you feel about, like, because you mentioned on your show In the Conversation, you talk about your son and him playing basketball. And how do you, I don't know, like, part of me feels, when kids are really young, and they have these guys yelling at them, I can understand where the critics are coming from, where they say, oh, they're yelling at these kids. But then there's black dudes in those leadership positions coaching these guys with that may or may not have dads around. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like to me it's like a beautiful thing, like seeing these guys that care about these kids. Like, they want them to win. They want them to be successful. But they genuinely care about these kids.
Right.
And I don't think that's really pushed enough. I don't think that's really brought to the forefront.
Because who's going to push it? You know what I'm saying? And you got guys who are out there doing the work.
Yeah.
And helping your kids understand certain things about life, certain things about sport. You know what I mean? But there's no ESPN for...
Thank you.
For, you know, the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Please. I mean, thank you.
Appreciate you.
There's no ESPN for the neighborhood, so you won't see it unless you're in it.
Yeah, it's just because I felt like, part of me, I'm not on like some greatest generation type shit, but I felt like coming up in the 90s, me and a lot of my peers, it almost seemed like that was like the last vestige of like parents like being around. Like, just like, you know, like they're like, oh, you got to take it to the, if my dad couldn't come to the game, my mom was there. She couldn't come. My aunt was there. Yeah.
You were good.
Yeah.
I mean, even before that, it wasn't always like that. And it's not like that for everybody.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But
like, I grew up with my dad, but he wasn't into coming to the games and all that
shit.
Oh,
really?
You know what I'm saying? So that wasn't a part of the situation for me.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Which which I tell my son is like it made it easy for me to not fuck with it. You know what I'm saying?
Because yeah.
Wasn't nobody paying attention.
Somebody's invested in you.
Right.
Yeah.
So it made it easy to say fuck it.
Right.
And not go to practice and go to that girl house.
Well, I mean, that's,
you know what I mean?
That's a lot. That's different. That's like, I want to quit because I want to quit. But girls, I mean.
Yeah, but, you know, if you, like, I had a situation with my son. He wanted to quit.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't let him. Not in the season. I was like, you can finish the season and quit afterwards. Because, you know, you got to learn how to finish.
Yeah.
And you got to, and I'm not going to be the one who makes it easy for you to quit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's a thing, that a lesson you ain't, I didn't learn until I was grown, that finish the shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Start and finish it. Because as a kid, you be like, hey, you know what? I don't want to do it no more. And you just, whatever.
I think it's important, man, because it's like you learn how, it's a part of sports socialization, teaches you how to work with other people. And you constantly see, even in corporate America, you constantly say, oh, this is our team, we're doing this, and we got to get these numbers up. Are you pulling your weight? Are you doing this and that? And it does teach you about life. It teaches you. So, I don't know. I think kids need that.
Right.
Young boys, young black boys, and just as much as girls need it too for empowerment.
Right.
So it kind of, it just irks me a little bit when you have these detractors that are always like, well, they're yelling at the kids and everybody gets a trophy and it's like, you know.
That shit don't last that long.
Yeah.
By the time you get about fourth grade, all that, no, everybody gets a trophy shit go out the window.
Yeah. Because you gotta produce. Like, even like coming, like I stopped, but like I just had an epiphany that, like, yeah, I wanted to be Bo Jackson when I was a kid, but I wasn't as fast. I was on the line, and I wasn't Bo Jackson. So I had this self-realization, well, you're not gonna be good at sports. You're not, and then when I started doing theater, that was something that I was good at, but you still had to perform. And I had a director in junior high that was, she was a taskmaster, and she was like, you're gonna be on your shit. She ain't say it like that, but she was just like, you gotta produce.
Right.
I don't care if you're 13.
You get on that stage, make it happen.
Yeah. So it's discipline and all that. So when you quit football, what did you, like, weren't you into music too? Like, you used to rap.
Yeah.
You kind of let that, I don't know, you kind of let it go. And when I was like, oh, what didn't this guy do? Not in a bad way, but it was just like, oh, shit.
Nah, but the thing is, my uncle had a studio in his house. And they had like a disco band that was signed to Atlantic Records.
Mm-hmm.
So, I fell in love with just being in the midst of the electronics and you know, being able to manipulate things and sounds. It was just like the whole edge of video games first coming out.
Yeah.
And computer.
We were talking like 86, 87.
Yeah, it's like the 80s. So it's the like, 80s. You know what I'm saying, computer synthesizers and all of these things. And it was like, that shit was amazing. It was like being in a trance, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they built a new studio where we do our podcast, and you can smell the new electronics, and it just sends you right back to a place. That smell, to me, just represents creating something. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Making something.
Right.
And so I've always been in love with that. You know what I'm saying? Before sports, that was, you know what I'm saying, during sports, that was after sports. So by the time I really stopped messing with the sports real heavy, I was already, I've been making beats and songs and shit for 3-4 years.
It's like rapping and like singing, or just mainly
rapping, making beats.
No, yeah.
Mostly it was making beats, and then I started rapping after I lost a beatbox battle in high school.
Okay.
I was doing a beatbox, and then I was battling this cat, and he hit me. He had some shit where he was doing like some yodeling with his beatbox. That shit fucked me up.
Like the Price is Right shit?
No, look.
Like when they, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You were like, oh, baby. I was like, oh, shit. Nigga.
He right.
Yeah, he destroyed me. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to start rapping.
Okay.
And so I just started writing shit and making raps and making beats. And
how old were you?
Like ninth grade.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
I think that age is when you really start to kind of form your musical identity or start like having your taste kind of, I guess, coalesce, if that's the right word, or kind of like start to, yeah.
You gotta understand, it's like you in Miami, I'm not in New York. You don't get to see all of these things. You get some of the songs. But then when the Fresh Fest came through, which was probably like eighth grade, Fresh Fest came. That was the first time you was able to actually see what this shit was all about. And then it was like, oh shit. And that shit took over my brain. You know what I'm saying?
Just who was there? Who was at the
Fresh Fest 1 was Run DMC, Houdini, Fat Boys, you know, the New York City Breakers, and a whole bunch of other motherfuckers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just all of the, you know,
the big ones.
Yeah, all of the rap guys from that time who was managed by Russell Simmons.
And that just kind of like, yeah, you're just, like, I'm that a rapper.
Just, that, not just I'm a rapper, I'm just, I'm, this like, is, this is my culture. This is,
yeah.
I didn't know what that was called, but
right.
I felt it like, yo, that's me right there. All that right there.
That's the power of like.
That's me.
Yeah, like, what did you think of Kendrick Lamar, like his performance at the Grammys?
I mean, it was dope.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the evolution of it all.
Yeah.
You know, you put the theater in it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It was a spectacle. Like, right. I think sometimes what's missing in a lot of rap music, a lot of hip hop, is the performance of it. Like, mm-hmm. like a visceral emotion that you get. And I think he definitely has it. Like, and I think Kanye has it too. I mean, I'm a Kanye fan. I was like, I like Kanye. I was saying on the latest episode, it's just like, I like the guy. It's an event. When he puts something out, it's an event, and it's something that we don't really have as much. Like, it's because it's kind of cold now. Mm-hmm. Like, the homie, I've said this 500 times on the show, but the funniest thing Damian Lemon said to me, he was like, we're talking about music, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to get the CD. And he was like, you gonna get the CD? And I was like, yeah. He was like, you old media ass nigga. And I was like, yeah, but there's something to it, man, because it's so cold now. You're just like, this person came out with the album, I am downloading it, and that's it.
Right.
But like, you would go to the store, you'd open it up, get the CD, take it home. You could smell it,
right.
And it's just like this tactile thing that's just missing now.
Right.
And it's just kind of, I just feel like, well, what do we have? Like, of course, there's indie artists that I get excited about, but you can share it on social media, but it's still cold.
Right,
you know?
It's different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the kids these days, they're not only, see, we only had, before all of this shit happened, like during the first Fresh era,
yeah,
all you had was the record,
mm-hmm.
or the tape,
yeah,
and what was printed on the label.
Right.
So that's when the record label actually meant something. When you look at the label, and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Def Jam, Black and Gray.
Right.
With a little turntable thing. That shit's hard. Who the fuck is this?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's all you had.
Mm-hmm.
Then the first Fresh came, and you had the show. So then you're like, oh, shit, that's what Houdini looked like.
Yeah.
Why is short so tight? But he cool anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, that shit off the chain.
Yeah.
Then it became music video.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got the music video, the show, and the physical product. Now, shit is flipped. Well, you got the live event. You got the show, you got the video, you got the short film, you got the interviews, you got all kind of shit. But then you have the day-to-day social media interaction with directly
from that artist.
Yeah.
Which we didn't have that. We didn't have that element.
It can kind of turn you off too, though, sometimes.
For you, because you're used to music culture being a certain way.
Well, say a rapper you like uh-huh. you'd be like, oh, I love this guy. Gonna follow him on Twitter. And it's like, oh, God, why did I follow you?
So for you, Twitter, that might mess it up for you. But for somebody who's coming in at this era,
they'll be into it a little more.
That shit is just as much a part of it, if not more important, than the music itself.
Yeah.
The music is just kind of like keep you going.
That's true.
And Rihanna is a perfect example of being the type of artist that can do the social media every day, keep people engaged every day,
mm-hmm.
drop some decent music enough for them to love, and go do her shows and keep that shit running 360 like that.
Yeah.
24 hours a day, every day of the year. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
She's definitely a beast at that. And that's, like, when you're talking about, you know, people might say she can't sing that well, but today, the talent is not just the actual art itself. The art now is the whole being able to take this whole thing and make something, make a spectacle out of it. Kind of like Kanye doing, but he's just getting raggedy with it.
Yeah.
But he understands, and he's within a system with, over there with them Kardashians, because Kris Jenner is like the mad genius of blurring the lines of reality and fucking entertainment.
Do you think she's affected him?
I know she's not only affected him, but she probably inspired him.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Which may come off to us in a bad way, but to him, it's like he's seeing what the fuck she could do with, like, yo, is this real? Is this fake? Is this a... And then she turned that shit into a whole fucking business of reality, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
He like, yo, that shit is amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To be able to take some lifestyle shit and turn it into a whole thing.
Right, right.
We don't know if it's real. They call it paparazzi on they self.
That's true.
But the internet needs shit every day.
We gotta feed the beast.
We gotta feed the beast. If the beast don't get fed, then somebody else gonna feed it.
That's true.
They understand how to feed the beast. Whether it's they gonna have the paparazzi on them day to day. You know what I'm saying? That's just another expense.
Yeah.
He probably got in that system and like, oh shit, that's how y'all do that shit? But he too crazy to keep it up.
Yeah.
The rest of them, they fall in line. They do what they do and they go home and chill out. He just kind of crazy with it. Would talk too much and put too much out there. And then it get too crazy for him.
Yeah, I just feel like I like Kanye. And sometimes he makes it hard for you to like him. But I always, like I said a couple years ago, he's just like an arrogant wide receiver. I mean, I think that's, for the most part, that's all he is. He's Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens should be a Hall of Famer. He will be. But it's like, yeah, because he took out a Sharpie, he didn't get in first ballot.
Right.
And maybe he was a cancer. I don't know. Part of me feels like, I don't know, this is a sidebar, but I just feel some kind of way about him because I was a Donovan McNabb fan. Like, my listeners know this, but I can be swayed on mostly anything. Like, I will be reasonable about most things, but black quarterbacks, I'm just like a staunch, I'm just a firm believer in them. I try not to, I'm still a little hurt that Cam Newton lost. Still a little hurt, man. It's just, it hurt. But
it's going to be all right.
I think it's going to be all right. And like you mentioned Marino, people say, oh, he'll be back. But people are like, damn, Marino never made it back. And I was like, oh, shit. But then, like, I was listening to Dan Le Batard.
Fucking Vinny Testaverde.
Oh, man, dude. Like, it's just like... But he never had the total package on offense. Like, Cam has a better overall team. If he can get somebody to catch the ball...
They've been catching the ball all year. I don't know what happened.
And you know what? I felt like the carrots turned into a pumpkin 2 weeks ago in the Super Bowl. And it was
They probably got scared under the lights. You know what I'm saying? Nervous, too overhyped.
Hopefully they'll be back. But
So you're in Miami, you're 14, you're rapping, you're making beats, and you had a story that you told one time about, I don't know how old you are, but it might work, or how old you were, but I think it was right before you moved to New York. You had a bunch, like a whole, like, file of beats and stuff.
Are you gonna bring up that?
Well, I wanna, cause it seemed like that was a turning
point. Up that?
It's
like, that's a Heartbreak Hotel. What's going on?
It seems like it was at your lowest point.
That was
as
that
an
was
artist.
Low, that was low. That was
so
very low.
How old were you?
I was maybe 24, 25, right before I moved to New York.
Okay, and it was like one of your like, cause you were doing your thing. Like, what was happening around that time? Like, you had you were rapping, you were doing your thing, you were doing pretty well, right?
Well. Around that time, I was doing well. I was doing my thing. I was moving about, but I was working on this album. And I go to my uncle's house every day, make the beats, you know what I'm saying, write the songs, record every day. And you know, I'm maybe 6 months into this process. You know what I'm saying? I'm fresh out of college.
Where'd you go to school?
At FAMU, Florida A&M University.
Okay.
So I'm fresh out of college.
What'd you major in?
Journalism.
Okay.
So I'm fresh out of college. I'm back home working on this album. Fuck the world. I'm going for it. And I'm 6 months into this situation. I'm burnt through all my money that I had saved up.
Mm-hmm.
I got a girl in my ear talking that shit.
This is a girl that didn't believe in you.
In the end, that's how I portrayed it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I don't think she didn't believe me from the jump. It's just over time, as you see, like, okay, this shit might not work. Motherfucker, does the world need another producer?
Yeah.
Type shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's over time. That's, you know what I'm saying? In the beginning, motherfucker believed me. Like, oh shit, he gonna do it.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going through this process, and I'm burning through my money. And, yeah, I came to the studio, and basically all my files have been erased. My master disk of all of the files have been formatted.
Because of some cat?
Because a cat that would sleep on the keyboard.
Uh-huh.
But when he jumps up on the keyboard, this particular time, he hits the format button and then sits down and confirms. So he erases all my shit. It was God working.
He was like, let's change Ollie's life forever.
Right now. Boom.
Wow.
So at this point, it's like, damn. One, you got to start from scratch. You already got the pressure of the world on your fucking back. You're damn near out of money. And you ain't got, you got to start over. All them fresh ass beats I had.
Well, did you have a name, like a rap MC name, like stage name?
Yeah, we might not go into all that.
Okay.
My motherfuckers might get to the Google and shit.
Oh, shit. Hey, man, they might find some gems.
Yeah. Yeah, I had some names and shit. But that was really the turning point. That's when I decided I was going to just move to New York and start from scratch, get busy.
Were you just like, you're like, fuck it, I'm moving to New York? What was that?
Yeah, it was like, fuck it, I'm moving to New York. I had long-ass braids in my hair. When I found out the fucking shit was formatted, I went in the bathroom, I cut all my hair off and shit.
Wow.
Just cut my, I was like, yo, something must be going wrong with my life. I got to change.
That's like a movie moment.
And I just changed, man. I changed. I decided, you know what I'm saying, I'm going to move to New York. Because I was in Miami, and you know what I'm saying, the entertainment industry wasn't popping like that down there at that point. So it was like, if I'm going, if I'm being the game, I'm just go get in the game where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Did you know what was it going to be? Music? Was it going to be?
I didn't know shit. I didn't know I was going to be in the entertainment industry.
Okay.
And I needed to go get some money, and you know, figure it out from there. I knew I had met the CEO of Vibe Magazine.
So I had him as a connect. So it was kind of like, I'm going to go to New York and see what happens, man.
And then what, so how long from the erasing of the files to your move to New York? How long, what was that process? About how long?
Maybe 2 months. That was like February. I moved April 8th.
Okay.
1999. That was like February. So from that moment on, I just started getting ready. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I moved in April with like $200.
Wow.
Came through.
Did you have a place to stay, or you had friends or whatever?
I had my girl house.
Okay.
But I knew that was a shaky situation.
Yeah.
So I had my homeboy who used to work with me back in school. He said I could stay on his couch. So I knew I was straight.
Right.
I just needed to get there to hustle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what kind of stuff were you doing once you got out there? Once you got up here in New York?
Shit, I was looking for work.
Just jacked up the whole time?
So from the time I got here, I was calling the dude at Vibe. Right? And he would always call me back. But when I got here, I couldn't catch him.
Because Vibe was hot back then.
Yeah, it was hot.
Yeah.
But he would still call me back. But for this particular moment, he wouldn't call me back. I couldn't catch him.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know at the time that he was about to leave the company to start his own company. So I'm chasing him. He wouldn't pick up. And then one day his assistant picked up the phone and was like, he's not available. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, you know what I'm saying? I ran down my little thing, what I wanted to do. He's like, well, you need to talk to this guy, Gary Lewis. And then she gave me his extension. So I fucking called him for 6 weeks straight. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know what I mean? The first couple times I left a message, I ain't hear nothing back. So I just called every day till he picked up. And then 6 weeks later, he picked up.
Wasn't there a story where you had to go out to the payphone and stuff?
This is that story.
So it's just every day?
This is the payphone era.
Okay.
So I'm working at a little fuck-ass temp job in the mailroom with a 15-minute break and a 30-minute lunch.
Yeah.
So I'm running down from the motherfucking 30th floor to the ground to get on the payphone to make these calls. After about a week of that shit, I was like, man, this shit ain't gonna work. So I got my check, and I was like, yo, I gotta make it happen with this shit, because I can't fucking do the calls on that schedule.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, the people at that company was like, hey, you know, you could be full-time here, but we love you.
Oh, shit,
like, motherfucker,
yeah.
You know who the fuck I am? I ain't that motherfucker.
This is not me.
But I ain't say it like that's what I thought.
I deal with that every day.
I thought that in my mind.
Yeah, of course.
Because they didn't know who I was.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I was a dude.
In your own mind. But you were, though.
No, in real life, I had already done shit.
You had done shit.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I owned two companies. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
I
really?
Started my first company. I was 19 years old.
So what was that? Let's go back to that a little bit. What company?
My first company was a TV show. And I started when I was in college. TV show called On the Set, where we went to different black schools every week and ran wild. Interview entertainers and show music videos. And so,
who did you have on there?
We had everybody, man. We had Naughty by Nature, Queen Latifah, you know, then JT Money, Poison Clan.
Okay.
We had everybody who was popping at that
right.
time. If they came through Florida,
you got them.
We got them.
Nice.
You know what I'm saying? So we did that, and you know, people, when we first started it, when we were getting it going, we wasn't on TV yet. People were like, yo, you know, you might as well put it on public access. We were like, man, fuck that shit. You know, we young and cocky.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We Kanye-esque and shit.
Sure, of course.
We don't know nothing about nothing. Like, shit, we don't want this shit on no motherfucking public access. We want this shit on real TV. So we shot the first show at Tuskegee during their homecoming. That shit was off the chain. And then we came back. We just started pitching it and pitching it. And then the local CBS affiliate put us on.
Mm-hmm.
But they put us on at 6:30, like right after the news. On a Thursday or some shit like that. And so we come on, first episode of shit. It's, first of all, it's Tuskegee. We interview JT Money from the Poison Clan.
Mm-hmm.
Famous for I Hate Hoes, Hoes Hate Me, Shake What Your Mama Gave You, you know what I'm saying? Hits like that.
Yeah.
And then, but the kicker was we was debuting, we was world premiering a video by a bass artist, a booty shake artist named Disco Rick. And the song was called Wiggle Wiggle.
Can you explain for the listeners that may not know what is a booty shake artist?
Bass music, Too Loud Crew, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
They were the inventors of bass, booty bass.
Got it.
You guys want another round of beer, maybe?
I'm good. I'll take one more.
I did.
Yep. And then, so it's like fast, up tempo booty shake music. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, Shake What Your Mama
Gave
You. Don't Stop, get it. Pop that booty, doo doo brown.
Yeah.
That type of shit.
Sure.
So Disco Rick had a song called Wiggle Wiggle.
Uh-huh.
Which you can, you know, understand what that's about.
Of course.
So Wiggle Wiggle, we were premiering his video.
Wow.
So imagine you went to your corporate job. You came home. You ate dinner with your family. You know what I'm saying? You watched the evening news.
Yeah.
And then right after the evening news, you got, yeah, on the set. Premiering Disco Rick and Wiggle Wiggle and all these black ass booties.
Beautiful black
shaking all over your TV screen at 6:30 p.m. It was a problem.
Done with this one?
Yes, I'm good.
So we got kicked off the station the first week. But
okay,
the ABC affiliate had vision. They were like, hey, we want that. But they put us on Friday night at 11:30.
Oh, that's what's up.
After the late night news.
Okay. Kind of like the first version of BET Uncut.
Well, we weren't that bad, but you know, something like that.
Yeah.
We had a little education in there.
You were doing it from black colleges, HBCU.
You know, hollering at the chicks.
Yeah.
Talking a little history. You know what I'm saying? Play a little music, interview some entertainers.
Sure.
So we ended up at the ABC affiliate, and so we came on the same time as David Letterman, and then Whoopi Goldberg had a late night show came out at the same time.
Okay.
So David Letterman, Whoopi Goldberg. So we, after the first ratings season, we was tied for first place with David Letterman in that slot.
Wow.
So, shit,
were somebody.
We had done it. We did that shit. And so we held that spot down. I left the show after 2 years. But the guys who kept running the show, they was number one in that slot for like 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I felt like I could do this shit.
Yeah, of
course. You know what I mean? And that, you know, that was the beginning of letting me know that the shit in your mind is real. And you can make that shit happen. Because that shit wasn't nothing but some shit we talked about. And then we bought a VHS-ass camera and a mic. And fucking did that shit and was on fucking TV.
Mm-hmm.
And was number one in the ratings.
Wow. Letterman.
Next to Letterman. Like, you know what I'm saying? It was real.
That's what's up, man. So you did have that confidence, and rightfully so. Like,
right. So after that, it was like, you can't tell. Like, what you gonna tell me? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I was broke and fucked up at the time. A girl done left me and shit. So I'm feeling bad, but at the same time, I still understand that what's in my mind could be real.
Okay.
And that's what kept me going.
So the girl left you in between that 6 week period?
Yeah, after 3 weeks.
Okay. Did she move with you?
No, she was already here.
She was
here in med school.
Okay.
And I had been talking about coming to New York. And then it was like, you know, I got me a girl up there now, so shit, fuck it, let's do it.
Yeah.
I had came up here before on an internship a couple years before that.
What were you doing? What was the internship?
I was at Mercury Records during the era of where they had Black Sheep. Engine Number 9 and all that shit. Yeah.
Who else was on that label?
Brian McKnight.
Yes. Yeah.
And So when I first got here, Brian McKnight's album release, his first album release party, was like the first week when I got here.
Okay, yeah. All right.
So
a little bit of Never Felt This Way on that record.
Yeah.
What was the big... That's the only one I could think of.
I don't even remember Brian McKnight.
I was kind of an R&B guy when I was a lot younger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You kind of merged in that... I merged into hip-hop like 14, 15.
Love him.
Oh, God, I love... Dude, man. Now it's just more like... People say R&B is dead, but I just think it's mainly in the UK now. If it's not like adult contemporary, like... Eric Roberson would still be R&B, Foreign Exchange. But you got people like Leanne LaHavis and Jesse Ware. There's all these people that do those tiny desk concerts on NPR. You're like, oh, they're good. It's not dead. They're just white now, or they have an accent.
Right, or, you got like Gregory Porter, he's jazz, but he won his Grammy for traditional R&B album.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Best traditional R&B album.
Yeah.
So
he's huge now.
Yeah, he's huge.
Yeah.
He's from right around here.
I need to listen to him.
Oh, you're
he's always
up on him?
He's always suggested on Facebook.
No, he's dope.
Yeah, I got to get into
it. If you an R&B dude, he's dope.
You know what it is? It's just I listen to a lot more podcasts more than I listen to music. So it just kind of, because I'm listening to it at work and music, if I'm listening to it, usually I'm like playing like a video game. Like I'm playing like my 2K or something or Madden, and I could absorb it that way. And it's mainly hip hop, and if I like a hip hop record, I'll put it on my like iTunes list to drive around and listen to before shows. But I just gotta be more diligent at letting new stuff in.
Nah, he's dope, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do a lot of his video work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's from around here, so we cool from all the way back. So,
talk a little bit about, so you finally getting the Vibe gig and then the shift to being a filmmaker.
Well,
just looking at it.
On Vibe, you know what I'm saying, boom, after 6 weeks, the dude finally called me back, told me he could put me on, but he couldn't pay me. But, you know, But see, you got to understand, my mentality was, I'm fucking here. All you got to do is let me in the dough. All the way here now. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, he was like, I can't pay you, but, you know, I buy you lunch every day and give you a Metro card. I'm like, well, shit, that's it.
Yeah.
That's my only two worries in life. You know what I'm saying? It's fucking eating and getting to the opportunity.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And y'all motherfuckers got fax machines, fucking internet,
mm-hmm.
computers, copy machines. Like, shit, I'm out here in the wild with nothing trying to make shit happen at the fucking phone booth. And y'all got all this shit right here? Yeah, come on, put me on. I'll take that.
So you were just super industrious.
I ain't have no choice.
You didn't have a choice. Yeah.
I am anyway, but I didn't have in this very moment, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
So I get in. Well, this was a Wednesday. We had this meeting. And then he's like, let's start. All right, I can put you on. We'll start Monday. You know what I'm saying? I'm sitting home Thursday like, well, shit, I ain't got shit to do today. I should go up there. I'm like, nah, let me be patient.
Yeah.
And then Friday came, I was like, man, fuck this shit. I'm just go. He already gave me green light. What could he say?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Good thing I did. So as soon as I walk in on that Friday, he's on the phone. He told me to sit down. He's on the phone. He hang up the phone. Like, hey, that was cool. Cigarettes. They want to do an after party for the event that we're working on. Can you put that together? Hell yeah, because the event was in Florida. That's what the event...
Oh, okay.
That was my proposal, that I could work on that event.
Okay.
And so, I'm like, hell yeah. So, boom, I go in the conference room. I call my people in Florida. I know all the DJs. I know, you know what I'm saying? I'm part of that community.
From your hip-hop past.
From my hip-hop past, because I did the TV, the radio.
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying? I did all that shit.
Yeah.
So, I know cats. So, I'm making calls. Bing, bing, bing. A couple hours later, I come back like, hey, we got this venue or this venue. This is going to cost like this. I had this DJ from the radio station. The radio station give me this kind of promotion.
shit's done. And he was like, well, how the fuck you do that? I'm like, well, I called such and such and such. He's like, you know such and such? I'm like, yeah. He was like, when you come in Monday, man, bring me an invoice for $5,000. I'm going to find you some money.
Wow.
That was the day I was supposed to start for free.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But because I came early, I was hip to the opportunity and was able to show and prove real quick.
Right.
And boom.
That's amazing.
So I was like, shit, I bring your invoice on Monday. When will I get the check? He was like, on Friday. I'm like, ah, shit. Nigga, I'm rich.
Ultra light beam?
You know what I'm saying? I'm ultra light beaming, dog. I'm like, no, who gonna tell me nothing? Y'all can't tell me nothing.
Yeah.
That's how I understand how Kanye be feeling.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? His execution, though, is a little wild.
Yeah, yeah.
But who could tell you something when you know the power of what could happen?
Yeah.
I don't want to get, you know, churchy. But no, when you know the power of God, who could tell you anything?
I struggle against that a lot. Not the power of God, but like, I don't know, man. Like, I was on my way to an audition that I ended up not getting.
Uh-huh.
But I was driving I usually drive to Jersey City and then take the path over sometimes. Listen to this one song. I listen to my, like, hip-hop mix, and this song that I know and love, and I'm driving, and I got emotional. Like, I just started crying. Not, like pain, but just, like, kind of, like, maybe this is going to be all right. Like, because it's, like, I had taken off from work. I was, like, I called off, went to this audition, didn't get it. But that same night, later that night, I got a call from MTV. They was like, we need you to come in. You know that thing you auditioned for in November? We need you now.
Right.
And I was like, wow. And it was just like, well, this is like, it's almost like this is who I am, but it's like, it's just a fear that it's not even a fear of failure. It's more of fear of success, because a lot of it's unknown.
And that's the whole thing. Unknown. All this shit is unknown. Mm-hmm. What you can do is unknown.
Yeah.
Until you try.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Until you do it and you're like, oh shit, I could do that?
Right.
Please, let me do something else.
This is a constant thing. Like, when I was a kid, I was doing theater and stuff, and you know, you do a show, and like, and it goes well, and I would be like, the next Monday back to school after the show had closed, I'd look myself in the mirror and I'd always say, well, you fooled them that time. What else can you do?
What?
Like, it's just like, it's crazy. So I guess it's just a thing that I'm like bumping up against right now.
Hey man, you gotta just go, man, because you know sometimes it's gonna work splendidly.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's gonna fucking fail miserably.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the opportunity exists at every single moment to do some shit.
Yeah.
You know
that's why I admire Kanye, and there's something about him through like all, even with all the braggadocio, right, there's a confidence in him that I think a lot of people don't.
Right.
And then they take that, and then maybe it's jealousy that people have. Maybe that's because they don't see it in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of like, he's this, and this. But, yeah.
Well, a lot of it is you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, well, first, you start your business. First time you do some shit, you will see. I'm glad I did it early. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A lot of people start businesses later,
and
in their 30s, or, you know, when they're more financially, you know what I'm saying, independent.
Right, right.
And they find out that they're going to lose half of the people who they thought was close to them, as far as in spirit. Not necessarily in reality, but right now in this time and space, they don't get what the fuck you're doing. They are totally opposed to what you're doing. Why would you risk all of this for something that's unknown? You're fucking crazy, and you're going to lose everything, and we're scared for you. You know what I'm saying? And that's the general sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
But people kind of, it comes out in reality, is just people turn their back, or they just stop calling you, or, you know what I'm saying, they stop checking on you, and then you're there alone, and you're calling them, and they short with you and shit. They don't call you to come to the party no more and shit. You ain't on the list and shit.
You know what I mean? Did you have that coming up?
I deal with that at every stage. Anytime you do something new and different,
yeah,
you're going to get that. But I'm saying, I was lucky that I started my first business when I was 19.
Was that the TV or what was the first
one? That was the TV show.
What was the second one? It's just this what you're doing now.
The second one was the music, the record label.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? That was the second one.
Oh, okay.
That was the music show.
Okay.
So,
well, so you, so how, so you get that $5,000 invoice, you set up the party in Florida. What are you doing then? Like, you're officially hired at Vibe?
I'm on contract to do the event. Vibe Live, which is a 3-day event in Florida and Orlando at Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
And the first act that I booked on that show was Destiny's Child, so I feel
like, you discovered them?
No, I didn't discover them, but I feel a nice little association with the band. You know what I'm saying? Actually, I got a funny story about that.
They were dope.
Yeah. I guess Beyonce was about 16 at the time.
Okay.
And they were doing a sound check.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't, you know what I'm saying, I wasn't paying attention. I just came up, I'm with my little clipboard, transferring artists from here to there. I had just brought a new set of artists from the hotel to the sound check, walk up on stage, and I look over, and I just see a fat fatty. And I'm like, damn, that's a fat fatty.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you remember these pants, like, called Skids.
No.
They were like some drawstring type of surfer pants. It was almost like pajamas, but it was all plaid.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody, it was like a little phase at
it. She had them on.
She had on some Skids, which really you ain't supposed to see no fat fatty on no Skids, unless it's a real fat fat.
Protruding out.
I'm like, wow, you can't hide a sweater under that. You can't hide it under a sweater or hide it in pajamas. So I'm like, ooh, what's that? And then her mother came walking up the stairs, and then I looked at her mother, and she kind of caught me looking.
Oh, shit.
But I wasn't doing shit. I was looking. But then I looked at her, and then her mom had a big ass. Her wedding ring was like giant.
Uh-huh.
So when I looked at her mother, the light from the sun blinged off the ring, and like was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And the only thing I could say was like, that's a nice ring. And then Tina was like, I work hard for this ring, baby. I work hard for this ring.
Oh shit.
So you know.
Hilarious.
So that's what we was doing, man, when we first got there. I actually put Trick Daddy on that show.
Okay.
Dead Prez. And we had a whole bunch of
that's
other people.
That's a good show.
No, it was, we had like Donnell. It was 3 days, so.
Wow, that was great.
But the ones that I personally said, hey, I want to get Trick
you
Daddy.
You had Where I Want to Be Donnell Jones on there?
Yep, Donnell Jones. Who was, what's that girl? It was a lot of people. I mean,
yeah.
It was the headline. I think, not Cameo, but one of those old school bands was like the headliner. Who's the one who's red cup? Like a red penis cup.
Shit.
Who was the one who used to perform and some shit that looked like a red cup?
A red penis?
It was either. Oh, man. Anyway, y'all will Google that shit. Google red penis
red
cup.
Penis cup.
R&B group.
Okay.
He'll get it.
All right. Hashtag red penis cup.
But it was a big show.
Yeah.
We had a great time, and I did my thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And the secret to my whole success, the major key, as Khaled would say, was that when I was doing the TV show, we had shot that event the prior 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I knew to pitch it.
Yeah.
To the dude at Vibe, because he was the one who gave us the access to shoot it.
Right.
So the trip part was the team that was doing that event this particular year, this was their first year doing that event, this team.
Mm-hmm.
So when we got there, all of the people at Disney, they knew me. They recognized my face, and they knew me from the other 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave me a great advantage, because the people who actually worked that Vibe full time, they didn't know these people.
Right.
So I became kind of like a go-between.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And that was a good deal. That's what really got me on.
That's what's up.
That's what got me on. So by the time the dude who brought me in saw that, oh, shit, this cat got value.
Yeah.
He was like, before we left, he was like, yo, I don't have no position for you, but I want you to stay around. So I'm going to give you another contract, and then we're going to figure out how to get you on. I'm like, bet.
And how long did that take?
Well, shit, that was in June. The event was in June. I was official at Vibe by September, the first week of September.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So.
And how long did you work there? How long were you there?
I was there from 99 to 2006. I was there 7 years.
When did the filmmaking bug bite you? Is that something that's always, you were shooting stuff.
Well, it's interesting because, like I said, the TV show is my first business. And then, you kind of left it alone when you was doing all the other shit. I wasn't shooting.
Yeah.
But the whole time I was at Vibe, I had some friends from college start a movie company. Mm-hmm. So I worked with them bringing all of the music situations together, putting artists in their films. I was served as the music supervisor, per se. So that was Rainforest Films with Will Packer and Rob Hardy.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Did they do Ride Along too?
Will Packer did Ride Along too. Will Packer is probably like one of the largest black producers in Hollywood.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
So we all went to college together, started out together, and the whole time I was at Vibe, I was doing their movies.
Okay.
Then I was doing documentaries with QD3. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So the Beef series, sure. Beef 2, Beef 3, Letter to the President. I worked on like 5 documentaries with him.
So you were doing that simultaneously?
Yeah, all at the same time. I was going crazy.
And when did that shift, when did you...
I left 2006 to start my own magazine.
Okay.
And so, when I left Vibe and went straight to the set of Stomp the Yard.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that was the current movie we was working on. But at the same time, I was building out a magazine of my own. Okay. And so...
What kind of magazine? Like just a lifestyle?
It's called 21st Century Hustle.
Okay.
And it was like I would say a business lifestyle. But it was more like... for lack of a better... It was new age. Because I was thinking... I was thinking about stuff like, hey... We all our own brands, and pretty soon, Social Security ain't gonna mean shit. A pension ain't gonna never happen. Mm-hmm. Retirement is not gonna be the same as what we think it is.
Right.
So we have to build our own shit in order to survive the next wave. And that's what it was all about. Like 21st Century Hustle was all about, you know what I'm saying, your own personal brand and making a way for yourself outside of just what, you know what I'm saying, the system already says you are or what you have to do. So, you know, so it was that type of book. You know what I'm saying? My first editor's letter was like, change or die.
I think I read some stuff that,
you know what I'm saying,
that Damien posted like a few years ago. Like, yeah, when I first moved here. Yeah, I remember
it. So one of the quotes that I had in the beginning of that book was like, the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read or write. It will be those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
It's deep shit.
It's deep shit. And at the time, it was like, I was like Kanye on some mind-blowing shit. So I thought.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But right now, today, which is what is about, 10 years later, it's reality. Everybody understands, like, oh, shit. Yeah. Motherfucker ain't gonna keep me at a job for 40 years no more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna get that gold watch at the end. Like, shit, I gotta figure this shit out.
I've seen people's retirements at the place I'm at, and it's very unceremonious.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you gotta build that shit yourself.
Right.
And that's what the book was about. But at the time, I had a hard time getting advertisers in the book, which is what pays for the book. I know.
That's fine. No, you're fine. Okay. I'm the asshole.
Okay. But I'm going to keep these stories short then.
No, keep going, man.
But so at the time, and what was I saying? Oh, I was having a hard time getting advertisers into a new thinking book that didn't focus on celebrities.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I struggled. I poured a lot of money into it.
Because that's what drives most magazines now. Right?
That's the only thing that drives me. Shit, you got to get advertisers.
Yeah.
So I had poured more money than I had poured into any other thing ever. And I started feeling like how Kanye feel right now. When he talking about $53 million, man, my shit wasn't that big. But to me,
it was
$53 million.
Yeah.
Goddamn. And you done put that shit out. You wanted to come back. And when you realize that shit ain't coming back, you start to fucking stress. Luckily, I have Twitter, or I ain't no public persona where, you know what I'm saying? My little breakdown had to be public, but, you know, I had to figure out what to do next, how to fucking reconcile this shit. And what I realized was...
Were you married then?
I was married. I had three kids. I had a house. So yeah. I had two kids, and I had a house.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Then my third kid came a little later after I switched it up.
Okay.
But I realized that video and the internet was going to be the next shit. You know what I'm saying? They had this little player come out called a kite player that when This Is 50 came out, they had a little video player in the middle.
Yeah.
That would show his live shows and shit like that. Then other people started using that kite player. I was like, yo, this the future.
It's like the advent of YouTube, like 05, 06, 07.
Well, it was YouTube was about 2 years old.
Yeah.
But Kite was different than YouTube because you could live stream through Kite.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You could go live or you could upload. Yeah. So it was like, it was a little different. It was a little, as far as I was concerned, it was more advanced, and it opened up to what I saw was like, yo, this is the future.
Yeah.
So I focused. I'm like, okay, video. Sure. I know that shit.
Yeah.
This the future. So I started selling video content ideas to the brands as opposed to advertising pages. And they bought it up.
And that's where that shift of you coming in.
And then I did my taxes 2009 and realized I made more money doing video than anything else.
Because you said something profound like a couple weeks ago. God, and it was something along the lines of America. It had to be you or somebody else. Mm-hmm. It was very sage-like.
And what did it say? What was it about?
Something like America's not really built on working. It's really... America, this country's built on you owning your own business as opposed to working for somebody else. I mean,
well, that's what the economy is built on. People who create jobs. The thing I probably said, which is something I read actually, was that it's like it's not the rich people that make this whole system move. You know what I'm saying? It's the people who make the jobs, you know what I'm saying, that make the move.
Right.
So if you make the jobs, you make the shit move. And you know, when you're in this situation, it's like you trying to eat. You can't, nobody's just creating no shit for you.
Yeah.
You gotta create a job for yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And you have to take your talents to be able to make work and make fucking income. And once you figure out your shit, then you figure out, okay, I could make a few other motherfuckers some money. That's how with me, when I went to video, it made me some money. But also, it was a whole collective of people in this community in Bed-Stuy that was already DPs and filmmakers and artists like Gregory Porter and his brother who's an actor, Lloyd Porter, who owned the coffee shop where we all met up. It's like, yo, I could make opportunities for all these people because all these people here, they need opportunity.
Yeah.
I'm running around. I'm making deals. I could make it happen for people.
Yeah.
And that's what became more important. And that's what became what it is now. Like, I'm a filmmaker and all that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that ain't where I put the importance. The importance is, can I come up with ideas that I can make happen and that I could put people to work doing? Or can I take somebody else's idea and can I make it happen?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's, my whole life is based on that. The fact that we could take an idea and we know how to make shit happen and we know who to call for what idea. That's it, man. That's all I'm about. So I'm more of that than a filmmaker. It's just film is just what we happen to be.
Yeah. Well, that's like, where do I want to go with that? I think that's a good way to end it, but I feel like there's more to it. So you deal with mostly like brands and you're making,
that's where we make most of our money.
Do you have aspirations to make your own film, like a drama or anything like
that?
Yeah,
we got, you know, I got ideas for all kind of shit, but one movie that I know I want to make is a college movie.
Okay.
An authentic college movie. Like, we did Stunned Yard.
Yeah.
But, you know what I'm saying, a lot of the college movies that have come out have focused on fraternity or, you know what I'm saying, that type of vibe. So, like, Stunned Yard was a fraternity movie. School Days was like the quintessential black college movie.
Of course.
But, you know what I'm saying, still focused a lot on fraternity and, you know, just the social dynamics between the social politics on campus.
What'd you think of Dear White People?
Dear White People, it was good.
Yeah.
But it was like avant-garde. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I want to create a movie that kind of authentically spells out how it feels to be fucking 17 and a half, 18 years old, first time away from your mama. You know what I'm saying? And you land on a campus full of black people, women and men, and all of y'all first time away from home, and y'all just explode with hormones and fucking energy.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? Because at that point in my life, that's when I discovered all this shit was possible.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a lot of power in that type of story. Like, they're white people, again, focused on a lot of politics.
Sure.
Of being on a campus, a white campus, as a black student. School Days focus on a lot of politics of being on a black campus and in different various ways of being black on a black campus.
Yeah.
I want to just focus on strictly the experience.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like a John Hughes type of feel. You know what I'm saying? Like how he took coming of age and he just gave you how it felt to be 17
and it's universal.
At that time.
And like as a black filmmaker, why do you feel, just somebody that I'm assuming that you're consuming the culture, everything that's going on around you. Why do you feel a certain kind of way as to why there aren't more black stories being told like that from your perspective?
Well, because we got to deal with the system first,
right?
And the system has to understand what it is that you're doing. Two, you know what I'm saying, as filmmakers and as writers, you know what I'm saying, everybody writes from their own perspective or thinks from their own perspective. I don't know why anybody creates the story they create, so what perspective they come from. All I know is that in my life I experienced that sometimes I think a little differently than what's already out there. So I can only speak for myself, is that I feel that way because of the way I experienced it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Spike Lee may have experienced it one way. The people who did Dear White People experienced it another at a white college.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Will and Rob, you know what I'm saying? They brought Stomp the Yard from a perspective of both of them are alphas, you know what I'm saying? So they were very entrenched into the fraternity culture of it all. Me, I was a solo flying cat from Miami, two gold teeth and hot top fade, you know what I'm saying? I was just there.
Yeah.
Fucking, where is that? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I told, this is what got me through a crucial point of having lost a lot of money and trying to figure it out, being in my Kanye position.
Sure.
My $53 million debt, personal debt position.
Right.
The thing that brought me through it was the simple fact that I was talking to my roommate from college who started the TV show with me. So he understands from that perspective. Like, yo, what made us live in that moment? You know what I'm saying? Why was that successful then? And what we're doing now is dragging. We ain't had no answer. About 3 days later, I woke up with the answer. You know what I'm saying? And the answer was, the difference is, in that moment, you 17, 18, 19 years old, I woke up every day on campus feeling like, yeah, something amazing is going to happen today. It's going to be some live shit to happen today.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's going to be. I ain't got a dime in my pocket. I don't know who, what, where. All I know is when I leave out of this house and go to campus, some live shit is going to happen. I'm trying to holler at something fly. I'm trying to eat something good. You know what I'm trying to go to the dope park. And we never missed the opportunity. We did all that. We had the girls. It was an exciting time. When you get grown,
you wake up with, oh shit, what do I have to pay today? Mm-hmm. Who the fuck gonna call about that? Oh Lord, I owe such and such them, they gonna call about that shit today. So it becomes a thing of waking up, not what's amazing gonna happen today. You be like, oh, what fucked up is gonna happen today, and how can I fucking prevent it from being as fucked up?
It's true.
You know what I'm saying? And then once I figure that out, I flipped the switch back. And then I woke up with the intention of, yeah, some live shit gonna happen today.
So, and that's it. You could just have to hope for live shit to happen. Or expect.
Not hope.
Expect it.
Expect live shit to happen. Because it will. If you look for it, it will happen. Live shit happens. This motherfucker's having a live ass time right around us right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm having a live ass time.
Exactly. We having a live time.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, you got to be looking for it and expecting it to come. Where is that? Where is that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like in college. Like, you go to a city. We used to go to a city. I had three questions for you. You know what I'm saying? Where the girls at? You know what I'm saying? Where the good food at?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where the party at?
Right.
That was it. That's and between those three questions, live shit is going to happen.
That's true, man.
You know what I'm saying? It's simple. I've built entire franchises on those three questions. You know what I'm saying? Simply put, we started a festival at Vibe called Yard Fest. That we did at Howard. We did at FAMU. We did it at an AU Center. We did it at Tuskegee some years. But everybody knows it from Howard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Howard gets the most publicity, so Yard Fest went on for years. It probably just ended it like 2 years ago.
Okay.
So it had like a 12-year run. But the Yard Fest, the formula for Yard Fest was you had to figure out who people wanted to see. So you had to figure out on campus, in the culture of campus, who were the livest people on campus? Who you think is the baddest chick on campus? Mm-hmm. Who you think is the livest dude on campus? Ask about 10 people, you're going to come out with about 3 people that end up in the pot.
Yeah.
Okay, where do these 3 people party at? In that place where they party at, what do they listen to? And what out of what they're listening to, what is the newest joint that's not on TV, that's not on the radio, that's just tearing the shit up in that club?
Like finding the new shit before it's mainstream.
Right, you got to find find the DNA of the community, and then find what's the livest shit within that DNA, and then you got to go out and put all the pieces together that fit, that aligns with that shit.
Yeah.
And then that shit was foolproof, and that's how you got to move. You got to figure out where your live shit at and how to plug that shit into the system.
There you go. Ali Muhammad, thanks so much, man.
Man, appreciate you for having me, man.
Thanks for spending time with me.
No doubt, man.
All right, man. That's it. Take it easy, everybody.
Word.